Military Mondays with David Katz.
Major Katz, how are you?
Very well yourself, Kathy.
It's so lovely to hear your voice.
Lovely to hear you.
All right. David, let's talk about what's happening between Armenia and Azerbaijan. Take us back. Where did this all start? What's the conflict about?
Okay, well, there's a lot of history behind it, in fact. Armenia, we all know about the Armenia genocide that took place in the First World War with the Turks. I think killing or murdering, let's just use the right word, 1.5 million Armenians estimated.
Yeah.
And it's just an unhappy situation for the Armenians because their population spreads across a number of countries. Anyway, back in 1917, just between the Russian River, before the Russian Revolution and shortly thereafter, Armenia became an independent republic. And shortly thereafter, in about the 1920s, it became absorbed into the USSR and lost its independence. And it regained its independence back in the early 90s, 1994, thereabouts. And so did Azerbaijan at the same time. And unfortunately, there's a little enclave that contains some Armenians called Nagorno-Karabakh. And there's not many Armenians in it. There's 150,000 of them. And they're a bit of a breakaway republic, not recognized by too many people. And they broke away from Azerbaijan. And this has been the cause of conflict between these two countries over the last, since they gained their independence back in the 90s. So this is what they're fighting over, ostensibly what they're fighting over at the moment. And that's a little bit of the history behind it. Azerbaijan, obviously a Muslim country. Armenia, one of the oldest Christian civilizations. I think they adopted Christianity right back when in the 300 AD. And they pride themselves on being one of the oldest Christian communities. So that's basically a little bit of history behind it.
Interesting. So where do we see this going, David?
A good question is one that Howard always asks me. He makes looks to me to give him predictions, which are quite impossible. But let me just say one thing, is that this is one of the few conventional wars that we've seen in the last couple of decades. We thought we'd see the end to conventional warfare, where two states actually engage and fight with each other. It's usually within the state. You've got a civil war and that type of thing. You don't see these days, in the last couple of decades, two states actually engaging in warfare. So this is quite a historic moment where people sounded out for many years now that conventional war was between two states was finished. Here we see it reemerge again between two states. Where is it going to go? Well, both sides have their backers. So I don't think it's going to go too far. There eventually will be a settlement. The backers won't allow them to escalate it for much longer. They're going to step in and there will be a peace. But in the meantime, there's going to be a lot of damage on both sides. People will be dying. Cities will be devastated. Populations will come under attack, the usual. But, you know, these two countries are basically pawns. Backed by different interest groups. So it's pretty unfortunate. But I would say this is not going to be allowed to carry on much longer.
Interesting. So when you say that they're pawns, pawns of who? Of whom?
Okay, so backing, good question again, backing the Azerbaijanis is Turkey.
Yeah.
And
that goes
Israel
back to World War II.
Supplies, say again, sorry.
And that goes back to World War II. Backing the Azerbaijanis.
Well, you know, Turkey is a regional superpower in the area.
Yeah.
And Turkey is being pretty territorially expansive over the last few years. We can see the problems that Greece are having in the Mediterranean with Turkey intervening there. We can see Turkish intervention in Syria. We can see Turkish intervention in Libya. So Turkey under Erdogan is quite expansionist, and they're looking to propagate their influence outside of their borders. And Azerbaijan is one of the areas that Turkey is interested in, being a fellow Muslim country, and they back Azerbaijan against Armenia to the hilt because they've got a problem with the Armenians. So they are definitely a backer. Israel has supplied quite devastating zones to Azerbaijan, and we've seen these in action, taking out Armenian tanks and the like. So Israel's right there, and Turkey has sent Syrian mercenaries to go and fight on the side of Azerbaijan. So we've got Turkey on the one side. On the other side, we've got the Russians backing Armenia, and the Russians keep a balance with both these sides, and it's in their interest to keep this type of a balance, because a lot of the oil that Russia gets comes from Azerbaijan, and I mean, they have interest in Armenia also. The Russians have a base there. So we have these two sides. It's an ambiguous situation, as you know, because the Russian-Turkish relations have improved over the last couple of years to quite a great extent. Yet the Russians find themselves in conflict with the Turkish in Syria, and they find themselves in conflict with the Turkish in Libya. They're backing different sides there.
Well, I mean, Syria was the ultimate proxy war, wasn't it? I mean, that's
the ultimate proxy war. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But you know, it's just the whole situation is ambiguous, because the relationships between Russia and Turkey have improved. The relationship between Turkey and NATO and the Europeans has disintegrated to a certain extent. So it's pretty ambiguous. So you've got the Russians in certain regional areas against the Turks. In other areas, they're with the Turks, supplying the Turks arms. The whole situation is pretty ambiguous. And the ones to often suffer at the end of the day are the countries themselves that are involved.
The people.
That are used as pawns.
Yeah, absolutely, the people. Major David Katz, thank you so much. Maybe next week, if Howard isn't back, you and I can talk about Russia's involvement in South Africa, historically.
Yes, we can do that. Very interesting, actually, Russia's involvement in South Africa and the Boer War and that type of thing.
I know,
yeah.
And great, we have a Communist topic. Party. All right, thank you so much. Wish you a wonderful week. Just before I let you go, I know that you're a man who has an eye for good architecture and good architects. Today is World Architecture Day. If I ask you for one building that is iconic of Johannesburg, what building would that be, do you think, in your mind?
First thing that jumps to mind, I've got a bit of a relationship with Ponte, believe it or
do
not.
Do you?
Yeah, I went to the mountaineering club as a youth, so we learned how to abseil. So myself and a friend, way back when, you know, yes. 40, 50 years ago, wherever it was, decided we're going to abseil down the center of Ponte. So, you know, Ponte holds a special meaning for me. We also, it's one of the buildings that, when I was in the army back in the 90s, and we did a lot of stuff in Hillbrow. It's one of those buildings that we raided, and the lifts weren't working. So we ran up the 50 stories via the stairs. So Ponte does it for me. There's no doubt about it. But there's a lot of fantastic architecture. Talking about architecture, there's a lot of fantastic architecture in Joburg itself. I think we were discussing it last night, actually. There's a lot of modern buildings, and we could be a great tourist attraction. A lot of sort of modern buildings survive, that modern movement buildings, whatever.
Yeah. And we've had Sandton City. You know, if you look at the Sandton City towers, I suppose the office towers with that pointy roof. If you had to see that, I suppose that could work.
You could immediately recognize it. You know,
Carlton Center from the
side. For me, it's the towers, the Brixton Tower. And I want to take you up on your offer that you gave somebody else to go up. I think, which one did you say, the Brixton or the Hillbrow?
Brixton.
I'd love to go up.
Brixton.
Yeah. I'm going to take you up on that offer.
All right. Okay.
Let's organize a tour. Let's go there.
I will organize it.
I sat in that restaurant many, many years ago. There was a revolving restaurant in it, and it was fantastic. But I mean, those are the things that remind me about Joburg. Those are iconic. Those two towers, Ponte. I suppose the Carlton Center is another one.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, Brixton Tower is, today it's called the Centec Tower. Chai FM server, all the other radio station servers are kept on the ground floor. Chai FM's is on the very top, which is why every few years we get struck by lightning.
Oh, I get it. Okay. Well, let's go have a look at it. Show me.
You know,
I mean,
we've got Chai FM and the Nations. I don't know what else
to
say.
I'll be dying to go up there. I mean,
but that's why I
got
up there.
Years and years. I think they've closed it. You're no longer allowed up there.
Yeah, that's right. It's only by appointment. Yeah. It's not for the public. It's private. Anyhow, David Katz, that's where we leave it today. And, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Bye now.
Thanks for the chat.
Thank you.
God bless. Take care. Bye bye. That's Major David Katz.